Okay, welcome back, everyone. Thanks again for making the time so close to Yontif. Appreciate everybody being on. Let me just do a screen share here. Let's bring up our presentation for Hilchos Sukkos. Very much looking forward to seeing how much we can get to this evening. Not a whole lot of time to be able to do to make the rounds on Hilchos Sukkos, but we'll certainly do the best that we possibly can. Okay, so let's take a look. Let's dive right in. I want to just leave up this version of the presentation again. It was much easier last time, not having to deal with the full screen. If it bothers anybody, just let me know. But hopefully that'll work out well for everyone. Okay, so let's take a look. Let's do a dive right in, and just sort of something of an outline just to lay the groundwork. Really, only going to talk about the halachos of actually sitting in a sukkah, living in a sukkah, dwelling in a sukkah, yeshiva basukkah. This evening, not really going to have time to get into the halachas of Arba Minim. I think that as far as a women's halacha shiur, this is a more sensible route. It is true, and let's put this out there from the very beginning. Both of these mitzvos, both Arba Minim and also Yeshiva Besukkah, both are of the category of mitzvos that we refer to as mitzvos aseh. Shazman Groma. They are positive mitzvos that are also time related or time bound. And therefore, women are, of course, exempt. Nevertheless, women, as much as possible, try to avail themselves of the opportunity to perform these mitzvos whenever feasible, whenever possible. It's not always feasible. It's not always possible. Other considerations and other life responsibilities, and many of which are the reason why we generally assume women are paturos, are exempt from such mitzvos. But nevertheless, these are mitzvos that we love, that we cherish, that we try to chase after, even if we're not strictly speaking bound by them in a fully obligatory sense. So let's try to understand some of the halachos. When they do apply, when they don't apply, how do we fulfill the mitzvah? How don't we fulfill the mitzvah? What prevents us from fulfilling the mitzvah? And let's start with the actual mitzvah itself. So the mitzvah of sukkah, the mitzvah of actually living in a sukkah, dwelling in a sukkah, commemorates the sukkos we dwelled in the Midbar. The pasuk actually says, "Laman yedu udarosechem," so that future generations will know, "Ki basukos hoshavti," that I, meaning this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is Hashem speaking, "Ki basukos hoshavti," I had them dwell. I allowed them to dwell. I made them dwell in Sukkos when they left Mitzrayim. I had them dwell in Sukkos. I made them dwell in Sukkos. So it's one of the few mitzvos, and we'll get to this in just a moment. It's one of the few mitzvos where Hashem basically tells us directly in a pasuk in the Torah itself, here's the reason for this mitzvah. Oftentimes we presume that this must be the reason, or this must be a reason, one of the reasons. Here, very unusual that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually tells us, here's the reason why. You and I might surmise that kibud av va'em is because Hashem wants us to respect those who brought us into this world and cared for us, and we should be makir tov, and we should try to develop gratitude. We might surmise that that is all the case, and indeed, that's what many, how many mefarshim explain in the way that it's even spoken of in Divrei Chazal. Nevertheless, Hashem never says it. Kabbeinu avicha v'imecha. Says it. It's a precept of the Torah. It's a rule. It's a mitzvah, and we abide by it. Again, very few mitzvos where Hashem actually tells us the reason why. This is one of them. We should understand what the pasuk is saying first and foremost, and that is the subject of a debate. It's a debate amongst the Tanaim between Rabbi Eliezer, I'm sorry, and Rabbi Akiva as to what the sukkos referred to the pasuk actually are. Are they sukkos mamish, actual physical sukkos, or are they the anani hakavod? We know that when we left Mitzrayim, we were surrounded by the clouds of glory, the anani hakavod. These served as protection from enemies. These served as protection from the elements. These served as protection not only from the atmospheric sort of conditions, but also the topography, the very rocky and difficult terrain that the Jewish people had to cross as they made their way through the Midbar. So the Anani HaKavod, the sides, the bottom, it would smooth out all of the rocks and all of the difficult sorts of like bumps and bruises and hurdles and hazards along the way. It would smooth everything out and provide the Jewish people with an opportunity to walk and to travel, to traverse in comfort. So this is probably not like an either-or sort of reality, meaning it's an either-or in terms of what does the pasuk actually mean? What does it intend? Don't know that it would be very difficult. It would be very difficult to state that for either one of these opinions amongst the Tanaim, whether Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't believe that there were actual individual huts or individual tents or whatnot that the Jewish people actually dwelled in. And it would be very difficult for Rabbi Akiva, I would think, to presume that within the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that there were not these clouds of glory. We speak about them in a number of different instances and different midrashim. It seems like the sort of thing that is understood. The question, more than anything, is just what we are supposed to remember. What is the commemorative aspect of Sukkot really driving at? Is it that we're supposed to remember the physical comfort that Hashem provided us with, the physical homes? Or is it more of the, or I should say the natural, more of the natural home that Hashem provided us with, or the supernatural home that Hashem provided us with? Anyway, so this is something that we should keep in mind. It's not so clear what the pasuk refers to. It's a machlokas tanaim. It's debated amongst the tanaim. And really, we should be mindful of both. Now, pulling it all together, we should really, really be mindful of both. And what I mean is as follows, that as opposed to some other mitzvos, where again, we surmise, we presume that this is the reason why, and this is what Hashem has in mind for me when I keep this mitzvah. Shabbos, we don't know exactly, right? Hashem doesn't really speak about Shabbos being this great gift of rest and relaxation and rejuvenation. As far as we know in the Torah, it is just an arbitrary, almost not arbitrary, but it is just this abstract means of remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's all we really know about Shabbos in the Torah. We don't know that it's supposed to, again, reinvent and revigorate and rejuvenate. We don't know that from the Torah. Those are the assumptions that we make about what Shabbos is supposed to be and how we experience it as an actual gift. Fine. Here we have something unusual. Hashem tells us why we have this mitzvah. Leman yedu dorosechem, so that future generations will know. Ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, that I had the b'nei Yisrael live in sukos b'tseisam mitzrayim when they left Mitzrayim. So we need to have this in mind. It's really, really important, more important than other mitzvahs, that we actually keep this in mind when we're fulfilling the mitzvah. I try, I'm usually better the first few days of Sukkot than I am the remainder of Sukkot, admittedly. I think I extend this period every single year. I try before Kiddush, every single Seudah, to remind everybody at the table. We should all have in mind that if we're going to fulfill the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah, the idea of Yeshiva B'Sukkah is for all the other beautiful thoughts and beautiful expositions that we have about the meaning of the Sukkah, the symbolism of the Sukkah, what it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to represent, and why it is that it comes after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and specifically this time of the year. Beautiful, beautiful Divrei Torah, and they're all true in some capacity or another. But they're not as true. They're not as true as what the Pasuk actually says. The Pasuk says that it's so future generations remember, once upon a time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed our ancestors to have a home to call their own, even when they traveled through the Midbar. Whether that was in the form of actual sukkos mamish, real genuine sukkos, that's opinion one. Opinion two is that it remembers or it commemorates the Anani HaKavod, the clouds of glory. And we should try to see those clouds. You should try to see the Anani HaKavod in the walls and the roof and the floor of our sukkos as well. Very critical that we remember both of these as we are fulfilling the mitzvah, more so than when it comes perhaps to other mitzvahs where Hashem doesn't directly give us the reason, the reasoning behind the mitzvah. Okay, when do we start doing so? So hopefully have a little bit more zrizus than I do, but ideally, so we talk about, building the sukkah already from Motzei Yom Kippur, trying to immediately emerge from Yom Kippur, from all the mitzvahs of Yom Kippur, into now the next mitzvah that's on the calendar, at least, which is building the sukkah, which is a very, very beautiful, beautiful idea. And it's a beautiful concept, a beautiful thing. If you could pull it off, you could put it into action. I've done it a couple of times in my life where it really did work out and I was able to do it. I found it more difficult as I get older. Sometimes I'm able to start immediately the day after. Sometimes I've already started, at least during Aseres Mitzvah. A lot depends on the calendar, but it's a very beautiful thing. Maybe a little too late on this particular halacha, considering where we are now in the calendar. But based on the principle of Teshuka Intaduru, which is a critical, critical principle, this principle animates so much of Hilchos Sukkah. This is the fuel on which so much of the engine that is Hilchos Sukkah actually runs, in the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah, Teshuka Intaduru. Because it is Teshvu Basukos. The Pasuk says that Shivas Yom Teshvu Basukos, that for 7 days you should dwell in Sukkos. And Chazal understand that that term and that idea of yeshivas, that that yeshiva that we're speaking of in the sukkah, that dwelling in the sukkah, is supposed to be something that takes the place, that supplants the typical dira, the typical living that you perform in your actual regular year-round permanent sort of home. So it should be akin to the kind of living that I do in my regular home, but I should supplant that living in my regular home with the living that instead I'm going to do in the sukkah. Teshvu ke'en taduru, the same way that you live in your home, you should also live in the sukkah. Sometimes that creates certain stringencies in terms of how we must live in the sukkah, sometimes ideally, and sometimes even just as an absolute necessity, baseline halacha. And sometimes this allows for certain leniencies, as we'll see as well, that because this isn't how I live in my home, therefore I'm not obligated to do so in the sukkah either. We live in the sukkah in the way we live our home. So what does this actually look like? What this means is that if we are thinking about sukkah as, okay, what do I have to eat in the sukkah, right? What do I have to eat in the sukkah? Am I really chayev to sleep in the sukkah? Am I obligated to sleep in the sukkah? Then we're looking at sukkah the wrong way. So this is a very, very good crowd to have this conversation with, because again, nobody on this call is chayev per se in eating in the sukkah. Nobody's obligated to eat in the sukkah here on this call. It is a time-bound positive mitzvah. You're exempt. We're on this call. We're talking about Hilcha Sukkah because we want to know. We want to know at what point do we fulfill the mitzvah. So we pine for the mitzvah. But beyond that, even just as a halachic precept, that the obligation of eating in a sukkah to those upon whom it actually devolves. So what does that obligation include? That obligation includes things that are even beyond just strictly speaking eating a bagel, eating hamotzi, or sleeping. Ideally, what we should be trying to do is to even be mitayel, says the Gemara. We should try to be mitayel b'sukkah. We should spend time in the sukkah. We should have sichas chaverim in the sukkah. We should get together. However you would use sort of like the typical living spaces of your home, your bedroom, your dining room, your living room, your family room, your den, all those kinds of spaces, those should then be transplanted to the sukkah. So we lounge in the sukkah, we chill out in the sukkah, we relax in the sukkah. If you're able to, and that means even bringing nicer furnishings into the sukkah to be able to do so, I'll tell you, Manon, that's a beautiful thing. That's a little bit more challenging in our climate than it is in some other places. I remember the first sukkahs I was in, Eretz Yisrael, my first year of yeshiva after high school. So we had yeshiva for all of just a few weeks, and then we were already on Bein Hazmanim. And in those few days between Yom Kippur and Sukkah, so the Bachrim who were like left behind, we went to the guys in the kollel and went to take a look, like, who needs help? Well, in your sukkah, you know, strong, able-bodied young men at their disposal. So I remember helping one of the kollel guys in particular. And as we were like putting the finishing touches on his sukkah, he comes out from his little apartment in Mevaseret. He's got a bookcase. And he brings out like one stack of Sfarim and another stack of Sfarim and another stack of Sfarim. Like, buddy, you out of your mind. Your stuff's going to get ruined. It's going to get rained on. It's going to get drenched. What are you doing? Like, chas al mamono. What are you doing? And it occurs to me now, it's not going to rain. It's not going to rain. It's not going to rain in Israel on Sukkot. You could pretty much take it to the bank. So it's a different climate, but I've been in, and maybe you have as well, been in some very, very beautiful sukkahs that are, furnished with couches and with, like real beds and full mattresses, and they're just left and, you know, and no problem whatsoever leaving it out. So that's ideal. We're not necessarily able to in our climate, but we should think about, if I am lounging, if I'm relaxing, if I'm just hanging out, if I'm just having a conversation, really, it's ideal. It's wonderful. In particular for men, but it is absolutely considered to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah to do so in the sukkah as well. Okay, so on this point, along the same lines, the kinds of kelim that would be brought to the table at home should also be brought to the table in the sukkah. It is the reality that we're not all able to do, like real dishes, real china, every single suda, every single Shabbos suda, every single Yontif suda, right? Just not always feasible, not always able to. It's this delicate trade-off between an additional covered Shabbos or covered Yontif, and then the reality of like, okay, but if that's going to kill me afterwards in terms of the just a stack of dishes that are dirty and that are gross and that are sitting and the amount of extra work, I'm not going to enjoy Yontif. I'm gonna resent Yontif, and you know, all those kinds of considerations. It's all cool. It's all okay. You gotta make those kinds of decisions. One thing I would just say, here's my pitch. If you were eating inside, If you were eating inside and you were going to use real dishes, bring the real dishes outside. If you weren't going to, because I can't and I can't be left with a stack of dishes, it's just impossible. I was going to do disposable anyway, so then bring disposable outside. But the idea that, oh, because it's sukkah, because we're eating outside, because it's not real, because it's shabby, because it's just eating outside and tzichem, I'm sitting on a, I got to eat on a folding table, so therefore I'm not going to use real dishes. Don't go that route. Don't go that route. Go the extra mile. Yes, it's a little bit more of a tircha schlepping them out to the sukkah, but that's what it is. That's part of Kavod Yontif. That's part of the Simcha of Yontif, and we should. And if we were going to eat on those beautiful dishes, then we certainly should in the sukkah, insofar as we were prepared to inside the house. Cooking utensils really shouldn't be brought into the sukkah. The kinds of things that are usually left in the kitchen, and that are, again, if you usually bring a pot of soup to the table, then, you know, by all means, but we try to leave the sukkah as elegant as we possibly can, in as elegant a manner as we possibly can, as much of an atmosphere and an avira that's proper and that's beautiful and that's pristine. Dirty dishes. Once the dishes become dirty, they should really be cleared. They should be cleared away after we're done eating as quickly as possible. It doesn't mean that the moment you finish the last morsel, you'll just get it out, but allowing things to stack up and become dirty. In that capacity, it is really garbage. A garbage can should be left outside. Should be left outside of the sukkah. Bring the garbage to the outside of the sukkah and deposit it there. You don't want to bring something into the sukkah that has, you know, refuse from like the day before and that has other things, dirty dishes and dirty food and whatever that's been thrown out. That should not be brought into the sukkah. A lot of this, it's less convenient. It's absolutely less convenient, but that's a sense that we should have. We should be mindful of the following. You've likely heard this before. There are precisely three mitzvos that we can accomplish with the entirety of our body. Three mitzvahs in which we can actually almost sometimes literally submerge the entirety of our body into that mitzvah. Sukkah, mikvah, Shivas Eretz Yisrael. Shivas Eretz Yisrael. So I was telling my daughter about this. She said, so what if you build a mikvah in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael? Could you get all three? I don't think so. I don't think that's a sukkah anymore. I think that once you put a mikvah inside of it, it's not really a sukkah anymore. It's not really a dira anymore. Teshu kein taduru, as we said before. But it was very clever. But you could be in a mikvah in Eretz Yisrael. You could be in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael. If you could be in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael, take me with you. Please take me with you. So if you could be in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael, it's a beautiful thing. But that's how we should think about it. So sukkah is the entirety of the atmosphere. It is mitzvah atmosphere. You're inside of the Anani HaKavod. So yes, it's a little extra effort to bring things in and to schlep things in and to schlep things back out for it to look all beautiful and elegant, but we really should. That extra little trek to and from the kitchen, it's really kedai. Leaving the garbage can outside and bringing the garbage out to the sukkah and trying to do so speedily so that we maintain the atmosphere and the environment of the sukkah, it's worthwhile. And by the way, it pays dividends. When you treat the sukkah in that manner, the sukkah treats you as well. The sukkah becomes an escape. It is a continuation, becomes an atmosphere in which you're really still very much living off the fumes of the Yom Narayim. As much as you put into the sukkah, you're able to then withdraw as well. It's really worthwhile. Okay, so disrespectful activity should not be done in the sukkah. If you're planning on speaking Lashon Hara, do it someplace else. But also washing dishes and things like that. So I wash dishes in my house. You told me, Teshvu Kein Taduru, you said that I'm supposed to live in the sukkah the way that I live in my house. So that's true. But when we say Teshvu Kein Taduru, it doesn't mean that anything that technically I've built onto my home as an extension to my home, what we mean, the living spaces, the residential living spaces of your home, the place where you live, where you reside, where you rest, where you lounge, where you sleep, those are the areas that we view the sukkah as replacing. A lot of things that we have in our homes that are sort of add-ons or that we've built onto our homes for utilitarian purposes that are not really part of the makom dira. It's not living to the same degree, at least not in a halachic sense. So it's true I wash dishes. It's true that I make meals and that I cook. It's true that I have a garage where I store all kinds of stuff. It's true that I have a bathroom inside of my home. None of those things, obviously, some more obvious than others, belong in a sukkah. Sukkah is not a place to wash dishes. It should all be removed. It should be dealt with outside. Okay. Sleeping in a sukkah. Now, shina sarai, which is very difficult to translate directly, a temporary sleep, meaning not a sleep where you're really established, set place, lengthy period of time. Like we think about sleeping at night. we think about sleeping at night is a shenas keva, right? Is a set mode of sleeping. Shenas arai is a temporary, more haphazard, meaning to say taking a nap. So even so, this is not permitted outside the sukkah. Even a short nap we consider to be perhaps sufficient to refresh a person. And I know everybody on the call is saying, ha, halavai my shenas keva should be enough to refresh me. Even when I sleep at night, I wake up. Even when I wake up at night, when I wake up in the morning after sleeping the entire night, I wake up and I'm not refreshed. So what are you talking about? Yeah, but sometimes you just have that quick cat nap and that's refreshing in a way that we don't look at a banana as replenishing. I can't really, now I ate a banana for lunch and I can get through the entire day. We tend to look at meals as being, I'm sitting down and I'm having my meal, but over the length of an entire day, it may well be that having that short shena sarai is enough to be able to get me through the day. The point is that it's considered to be sufficient, or not sufficient, but it's considered to be significant. Sorry, I'm just turning around to plug in my laptop here. It's considered to be significant from a vantage point of the sukkah, that this is considered to be an established activity, a real considerable mode of actual dira, such that I would need to do it inside of a sukkah. By the way, something to just consider, and we should consider the following, also because it's an amusing image. But there may well be certain heterim for sleeping inside during sukkahs. Fear, discomfort. The Rama talks about the idea of husband and wife not sleeping in the same room, not being able to sleep side by side. So that's not teshvu ke'en taduru. The Rama, it should be, just to be honest, to be intellectually honest, the Rama says this is sort of it's kind of unusual. A lot of people don't seem to be makbid on this. What's the story? How come nobody's careful with this? Oh, maybe you could say this. It doesn't seem like it's such a lechatchila, but at any rate, this is something that he puts forward. So there may be real reasons. There may be legitimate reasons, legitimate, semi-legitimate, fairly legitimate, rather legitimate. There may be real reasons to sleep in the sukkah, to sleep in at home, or to sleep inside the regular bedroom, even on sukkahs. Again, fear, discomfort, real discomfort. I'm afraid I can't be out of head. Just it's so unnerving. I'd never be able to fall asleep. Don't you know that people get mugged in Cherry Hill Estates and whatever? So there may be legitimate reasons. It becomes more difficult, becomes much more difficult to build a case when you're talking about napping in the afternoon. Meaning to say, if whenever I sleep, I really, really have to sleep in the sukkah unless I get my official dispensation otherwise, it's easier to hand out that dispensation when it comes to sleeping at night. When it comes to sleeping during the day, what's the issue? Well, husband or wife cannot, spend a night apart from one another, not being in the same room. Well, that might be, but that's not true for an hour in the afternoon. Oh, it's just so I guess it's so unnerving, and it's so scary and frightening. There are foxes running around Cherry Hill, and raccoons and all kinds of other things, all kinds of other animals and birds of prey and wild turkeys and all kinds of things. That might be true at night. That's not so true during the day. It's hard to make the case. Harder, much, much harder to make the case during the day, right? Not if you find yourself nodding off on the couch. Again, less for women, certainly. But in terms of understanding the actual baseline halacha and obligation, the man were to find himself nodding off on the couch during the day, very difficult, very, very difficult to say that there is a heter for doing so. That should really be transferred to the sukkah. Get up, go to the sukkah. Maybe by the time you get there, you won't feel like falling asleep anymore. You won't feel like napping. Could be. Put your head down on the table. And you might say, yeah, but my sukkah is not set up. My sukkah is not set up to go to sleep. So it's terribly uncomfortable. That's as true as it might be uncomfortable to eat in the sukkah if you didn't bring in a table and chairs. But that is not sufficiently legitimate to claim, oh, yeah, I'm in so much pain. It's so difficult, such tsar to try to eat in the sukkah. No, bring in a table and chairs. Right, you fell down on your responsibility to bring in the table and chairs. Fell down on your responsibility to bring in a mattress, then you might be uncomfortable. But you should bring in a mattress. Make sure you have a mattress. Make sure you have a sleeping bag. Make sure you have something comfortable enough to sleep in. What happens when it rains? You schlep it in. You schlep it out. You schlep it in, and it's okay. It's not the end of the world. In terms of the overall hierarchy of the effort that mitzvos and halacha requires of us, this is a rather small buy-in, all things considered. It's relatively light, relatively easy. Okay, so let's talk about achila. And achilas arai is permitted outside the sukkah, since it's commonly done outside of one's home. What do we think about when we think about, no, I'm sitting at the table specifically in my house. We talk about eating certain kinds of food, not so much eating other kinds of foods, right? I may well have an apple on the run. I may well walk down the street and have a banana. I may well just be sitting in my car and having something else. Now, you could argue, okay, I might also well be sitting in my car and having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Yes, so there is truth in that in terms of how achila has developed. But suffice it to say that in the understanding of that Chazal had of like classic, again, human functioning in terms of what we consider to be more established, achila and achila of a suda is significant, is substantial. That certainly has to be done in the sukkah. The question is, what exactly constitutes an achilas keva versus an achilas arai? Permanent eating versus lighter sort of eating. So if you eat more than a kibbetza of bread, that's achilas keva, which we generally do, or you're having a good amount of bread and then along with a lot of other things also. Usually if we're sitting down to a suud, then having bread, so that becomes an achilas keva. You hit the necessary shiurim, and therefore that would be obligated to be eaten in a sukkah. For a man, he'd be chayev to eat in the sukkah and would then make a leishe basukkah. A woman is, again, not chayev to eat in the sukkah, but she would make the brach of leishe basukkah if she is doing so, if she's going to avail herself of the opportunity to do so. And again, highly, highly encouraged, if at all possible. What else? Mizonos. Eating more than kibbetz of mizonos. Cake, cookies, brownies, crackers, things along those lines, where you're having more than a kibbetza, again, also necessitates a sukkah. Now, the bracha, when it comes to mizonos, is a little bit more tricky in terms of leishe basukkah. It's really not so clear. The Mishnah Berurah has a conversation about this, where he says, you know, eating mizonos, it doesn't really constitute a genuine meal. It's hard to say you should really... Should you eat in a sukkah? You should eat in a sukkah. But to make the bracha, making the bracha is like, I'm certain that I'm performing the mitzvah. I'm certain that I'm obligated in this mitzvah, that this is a real fulfillment of the actual mitzvah. Not so simple to say that, meaning really a person doesn't need a few rugelach on the run. But he suggests the following. He says that the fact of the matter is, you see that this has become minaga olam. You see, this is what everybody does. Everybody makes a leishe basukkah when they eat mizonos. Somebody sits in the sukkah and he has some ragalach and he's making leishe basukkah. You have some cake, making leishe basukkah. If you're having a good, again, sizable amount. So his suggestion is fine, do so. But what's really ideal is to then try to linger in the sukkah for a while afterwards and have kavana when you first make the bracha that I'm making the bracha, but it's a combination of things. I'm eating my ragalach. I'm going to stay in the sukkah a while. I'm going to read a book in here. I'm going to learn a little bit in here. I'm going to schmooze a little in here. I'm going to play a game with the kids. I'm gonna sing some songs, whatever it is. I'm gonna hang out for a while. I don't usually make a bracha if I just hang out in a sukkah. And says the Mishnah Berurah, I'm not sure you should really make a bracha if you're just eating mizonos, but if you're doing both of them, so then, and that seems to be the minhag. That's what people do. So he says, therefore, you could feel a little bit safer in making that bracha. Fascinating, fascinating halacha. There's like so much to say on this and what other areas of halacha where you have this. This is like halachic cross-pollination, where ordinarily what you are eating might not be sufficient to say that you're really fulfilling the mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah. I'm having a kazayas of cake, a little bit of cake, kazayas of cake. It's not really enough. It's not really a suud. It's not really sizable enough to say that that's the mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah. Don't make a leishe basukkah on that. Too small on the one hand. On the other hand, let's say it's Shabbos. Or let's say it's Yontif. So if it's the first day of Yontif, or if it's Shabbos, there's no Shabbos called Moed, but let's say it's first day of Shabbos. It's first day of Yontif. It's also Shabbos, right? And I come home and I want to make a kiddush. So I make Kiddush. Now, I'm not really allowed to make Kiddush. See if you could follow this. You kind of have to have familiarity with the terms already, perhaps. So if you get it good, not, but it's interesting if you do. I'm obligated when I make Kiddush to not just make Kiddush. I'm not really supposed to have a standalone Kiddush. Can't just have a freestanding Kiddush. I need to eat immediately afterwards. I need to have a kazayas of like mizonos immediately afterwards. That's the idea of kiddush b'makom seuda. When you make kiddush, kiddush is insufficient if it's just on a cup of wine. It also has to have some food that's following. Now, that food that's following, we say kiddush b'makom seuda. There needs to be a seuda that follows. But we say that, okay, for the purposes of this halacha, we don't consider a seuda to be a real seuda. You don't have to like sit down and wash and bench and have a whole thing. We know we make kiddush downstairs in the kiddush room at shul, social hall. So everybody, yeah, you have like a little bit of cake. You have a kazayas of cake. You have a kazayas of barley, maybe from the chalent, a kazayas of mizonos, and we say that that's sufficient for the purpose of this halacha. That's considered to be a seuda, cross pollination. Since with respect to Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Yontif, with respect to the halachos of kiddush, it's considered to be a seuda. Magic, presto, changeo. Now that's considered to be a seuda with respect to sukkahs as well. Now that I'm having it in a sukkah, I can even make a leishev basukkah because there's another halakha. There's another area of halakha where we're now establishing that this is actually a seuda. Therefore, that's going to impact the halachos of eating in the sukkah as well. You could even make a leishev basukkah on that. Just an interesting little tidbit there. Okay, let's just do two more, and we'll have to cut it here, and maybe I'll try to make a note that next year Sukkot, this is where we left off, and we'll pick up the halachas from here. But the inverse is also true, that eating non-mizonos food, meat, fish, fruit, vegetables, nash, chocolate, candy, drinks, does not constitute an achilas keran, therefore wouldn't really require Sukkot. These are the kinds of things that people eat on the run. It's not the sort of thing that I make a point specifically of having in my home. And since that's the case, I therefore don't have to have it, strictly speaking, in a sukkah. Having said that, Maisa, really, really should still be careful. Don't be koveya seuda on these kinds of foods, even on these kinds of foods outside the sukkah. Meaning to say, sometimes, do you ever feel like it's like the most guilt-ridden bari nefashos in the world? Right, like you go out and like, you know, reserve cut, I don't know, whatever they charge for the $750 for a steak and $275 for an order of fries and salad, and you had appetizers and this, that, meat and fish and eggs and vegetables and fruit, everything. Wow, over the top, stuffed to the brim. And what do you do at the end? You don't bench. Sometimes it feels like I ate so much, I should be like davening musaf. I ate so much, forget about benching. And yet, all it is a bari nefashos. It is what it is with Hilchos Brachos. But with respect to Hilchos Sukkah, you should be careful. That does constitute being koveya seuda. Again, anybody on this call, right, not really chayev to have it in a sukkah, but it would be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. And also, if there are men in your life who are over bar mitzvah, right, you should be aware of this, right, that this is not, it is not an appropriate move to say, look, we're just having chicken and rice and broccoli, and we're going to have some, you know, like a baked apple for dessert and, you know, some drinks or whatever, right? So it's a little cold. It's a little chilly. It's a little chilly outside. I have to put on a sweater. It's not so comfortable. Let's just eat inside. We're not being koveya seuda anyway. You really are. If it's 7 o'clock and you're eating dinner and you're having what we would all call dinner, you're basically chayev to have that in a sukkah. When we talk about not being chayev to eat in a sukkah because it's an achilas arai, we're talking about having an apple on the run and having some, you know, carrot sticks. And, you know, I went to Cherry Crest Farm, so I brought like a little, you know, Tupperware of some roast like butternut squash. That's what we're talking about. Really sitting and having a meal as a meal. That's really not cool outside of a sukkah. Certainly not for a man who's chayev in Hilchos Sukkah. And again, women, this would be availing yourselves of the opportunity to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah. Okay, so let us hold it here. Got to discuss some of the very, very important and pertinent halachos of Hilchos Sukkah, and wishing everybody a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Any specific questions before we log off here? I think everyone's muted, so you can feel free to unmute if you do have a question.
Rabbi, can you just say again, like what you said early on about the two things that we focus on why we're eating in the sukkah?
Sure. So we're focused on the pasuk. The pasuk says that the reason why Hashem gave us this mitzvah for us, me and you, to live in a sukkah, is leman yedu dor seichem, so that future generations will know That when I took your ancestors out of Mitzrayim, I had them live in Sukkos. That's the pasuk that we're trying to fulfill. Unusual that Hashem would tell us the reason for that mitzvah. Now, what exactly Hashem is conveying that pasuk is the subject of a machlokas. What does it mean when Hashem says that I had your ancestors dwell in Sukkos? Rabbi Akiva says that what Hashem means in that pasuk is that we lived basukkos mamish. He had us live in actual Sukkos. He provided us with the raw materials. He gave us whatever it was that we needed, taking it out of Mitzrayim, whatever we were able to pick up in the Midbar, whatever we were able to take with us and grab and go. The idea that we had the raw materials on hand to be able to create some sort of even ramshackle dwelling, that was basically a nes in of itself. That was a kindness and a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is why we commemorate and celebrate Sukkos, to commemorate that great act, that great tova, that great chesed that Hashem did for us. But the Ezra says, no, it doesn't refer to the Jewish people living in actual huts that were at all akin to the ones that we ourselves are building. It's talking about the Anani HaKavod. When that pasuk says Sukkos, it means covering, but it doesn't mean cover. It doesn't mean Sukkos like what you and I call a sukkah. It means Anani HaKavod. So you have a debate about what the pasuk means. It's clear that this is something we're supposed to keep in mind when we fulfill the mitzvah. We're supposed to keep in mind that Hashem had our ancestors dwell in Sukkos. What does it mean that he had them dwell in Sukkos? Does it mean that he had them dwell in Sukkos like our Sukkos, Sukkos Mamish? Or does it mean that he had them dwell in Anani HaKavod? What we should do is keep both in mind. We should keep both in mind. Every time we go into the sukkah, every time certainly you have a seuda, you sit, certainly you make a bracha, we should have in mind as much as possible that this act is to commemorate that great chesed, whatever exactly that chesed was, that great chesed that Hashem did for our ancestors thousands and thousands of years ago.
Thank you.
Sure, you bet. Okay, everyone, wishing you all a chag kasher v'sameach. Hope I'll get to see some of you over the course of Yontif, and if not, then wherever you may find yourselves, wherever you may be, chag kasher v'sameach, and thanks again for taking the time to learn a little bit about the chag before it's actually upon us. Have a wonderful night. Thanks, that's from you.